still remaining in the Buddha's own time, we can go a little farther. Suppose someone hears the Buddha expound the Dharma. Suppose he is impressed and thrilled and goes for refuge. Suppose he gains stream entry. Yet there is still something else that may happen at this point, something else that he may do. He may leave home and become a bhikshu or bhikkhu. Not that this was invariably the case. Sometimes people went for refuge and, at the same time, their dharma eye opened, but they did not leave home. But sometimes, in fact, very often, they did. In such cases, we have not two but three things happening together at the same time. Going for refuge, stream entry, and what subsequently came to be known as ordination, i.e. going forth into homelessness and becoming a bhikshu or monk. This was the situation during the Buddha's lifetime. After the Buddha's death, or what we call his parinirvana, many changes took place. Perhaps inevitably, a certain spiritual deterioration set in. Stream entry became rarer and rarer, and, as the centuries went by, the emphasis came increasingly to be placed on becoming a monk, in the more formal sense, and the going for refuge gradually lost its significance as the central act of the Buddha's life. This happened especially in the Theravada countries of Southeast Asia. Today, if you visit these countries, or if you talk to a Theravada Buddhist, they will not say very much to you about the importance of going for refuge. They will be much more likely to speak in terms of becoming a monk, in the more formal sense, i.e. shaving one's head and donning the yellow robe. This is the Theravada emphasis. For the Theravadins, there are two kinds of people, the monks and the lay people. On this side, there are the monks, who are the real Buddhists. On that side, the lay people, who are the not-so-real Buddhists. One would even speak of them as the first-class Buddhists and the second-class Buddhists. Sometimes the difference seems to be almost as great as that. Looking at things from a different point of view, however, and seeing them more as they were in the Buddha's day, one might say that though there certainly is a difference, it is of a different kind. The real difference is not between monks and lay people, but between those who go for refuge and those who do not go for refuge. Whether you are a monk who goes for refuge, or a layman who goes for refuge, a man who goes for refuge, or a woman who goes for refuge, is of secondary importance. That you live in a certain kind of way, or follow a certain discipline, is of secondary importance. What is of overriding importance is your common spiritual commitment, your common going for refuge. This is why, in the FWBO, in the TBMSG, we have a sort of saying or slogan, going for refuge or commitment is primary, lifestyle is secondary. Now, although in the Theravada countries the distinction between monk and layman was unnecessarily insisted upon, and the significance of the going for refuge lost sight of, this did not happen in the Mahayana countries to nearly so great an extent. As their designation itself suggests, the Mahayana countries followed the Mahayana, the great way. They followed the Bodhisattva ideal. They stressed the ideal of attaining enlightenment, not just for one's own individual sake, but for the sake of all. Ultimately, of course, the distinction between the two ideals falls to the ground. You cannot really gain enlightenment for the benefit of others unless you are a person of considerable spiritual development yourself. And you cannot develop spiritually yourself unless you are, at the same time, to some extent mindful of the needs of other people. In the long run, spiritual individualism and spiritual altruism coincide. But as a necessary corrective to the earlier, more individualistic approach of the Theravada and of the Hinayana generally, the Mahayana stressed the bodhisattva ideal. The attitude of the bodhisattva is, I don't want enlightenment only for myself. If it's to be only for myself, in a sense I'm not interested. I want enlightenment for all. I'm therefore working for enlightenment for all, including myself. Not that the bodhisattva leaves himself out, includes himself, but only as one among many. His mission is to work for the spiritual progress, the ultimate enlightenment of all living beings. Since the Mahayana adopted or developed the bodhisattva ideal, all lesser distinctions lost their significance. The Mahayana insisted that everybody should aim at bodhisattvahood. Everybody follow the bodhisattva ideal, be they monk or lay person, literate or illiterate, rich or poor, spiritually developed or spiritually not so developed. All should aspire to enlightenment for the sake of all living beings. On account of the presence of the bodhisattva ideal, therefore, we find that in the Mahayana there is less of a difference between monk and layman, or at least that the difference is less insisted upon. But what is a bodhisattva? And what does it mean to aim at enlightenment for the sake of all? According to Mahayana tradition, a bodhisattva, in the real sense, is one in whom the bodhicitta, or will to enlightenment, as I translate the term, has actually arisen as a vital spiritual experience. The bodhicitta is not a mere pious aspiration. It is not a concept or an abstract ideal. But when, within the depths of your being, there arises an immensely powerful impulse towards enlightenment for the benefit of all, and when that impulse dominates your whole life and becomes the master current of your existence, then that is the bodhicitta. Here, an interesting question arises. What is the nature of the relation between, on the one hand, the bodhicitta, or the arising of the bodhicitta, and on the other hand, the going for refuge, the opening of the dharma eye, stream entry, and even going forth into homelessness and becoming a monk? The bodhicitta, or the arising of the bodhicitta, represents, we may say, the more altruistic dimension of these four other experiences. Or rather, all five of them, including the bodhicitta itself, represent the five different aspects of a single basic, crucial, and unique spiritual experience. The going for refuge draws attention to the emotional and volitional aspect of this experience. The opening of the dharma eye to the unconditioned depth of its cognitive content. Stream entry to the permanent and far-reaching nature of its effects. While going forth into homelessness draws attention to the extent of the reorganization which, regardless of whether or not one becomes a monk in the formal sense, the experience inevitably brings about in the pattern of one's daily life. As for the bodhicitta, it represents, as we've said, the altruistic or other regarding aspect of the experience.